Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Are you looking to serve God and society? Consider putting your gifts to work as a lawyer. Ave Maria School of Law has been educating faith-filled lawyers for over 20 years. Ave Maria School of Law is committed to training lawyers to use law appropriately around the moral issues of our time. Visit avemarialaw.edu to learn more about integrating your faith with a law degree.
Looking for a way to build daily prayer discipline? Seen the rise in mindfulness meditation, but not sure if it is possible to meditate in a way that's consistent with your Catholic faith? Just looking for a way to breathe new life into your existing prayer routine? No matter what you're looking for, Hollow is here to help. Hollow is a Catholic prayer and meditation app that helps users deepen their relationship with God through audio-guided contemplative prayer sessions. From meditations on the daily gospel, to the rosary, to daily examines, Hollow has something for everyone. Hollow is the number one Catholic app in the U.S. It is free to download and has permanently free content, but you can also check out all of the premium sessions for 30 days, risk-free, by signing up at www.hollow.app/breadbox.
Warning, the Catholic Man Show contains high levels of manliness. It's simple, really. You either want to grow in virtue and holiness, or you want to be a sissy, whiny baby. If you choose to move forward, grab your whiskey glass, because the Catholic Man Show is starting right now.
Welcome to the Catholic Man Show, and Happy New Year!
Happy New Year!
I'm Adam Inhan, sitting here with David Niles. Juan on the buttons, he just had an espresso, as did David.
I did too.
So we'll see how that goes this evening.
Yeah. Coffee doesn't have like a big,
effect on
you? I consume a lot of it, so.
So, it's minimal.
Yeah, my tolerance... My caffeine tolerance is high.
I understand.
Yeah.
We have Jim here today. He already has helped us out. We started the episode once. I said the same jokes already.
Yeah.
The Happy New Year's, the espresso.
But we didn't make it this far. We've already made it further.
Than what we did for round one.
Right.
So yeah. That's good. But yeah, new liturgical year, entering the end of the season of Advent. Mm-hmm. Last week we had a great episode with Dr. Milosh on the incarnation. I almost said reincarnation. That would have been not the same thing.
Yeah, so wait. When Jesus comes back, will that be the reincarnation? No, I don't
it's
think
not.
So.
It's not.
Unless he takes like a new body.
But he would.
I don't think he's going to do that.
No. So we had a good conversation with Dr. Milosh talking about the incarnation. And tonight we're going to talk about the Council of Trent, the Catechism of the Council of Trent, what it says on three things to avoid as a parent.
Really looking forward to it. The Catechism of the Council of Trent is phenomenal. It's a great little doodad.
We
won't talk about it now.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
It's great.
I'm foreshadowing is what I'm doing.
Well played. Well played. So tonight we're gonna drink a bourbon. It is it's called Rabbit Hole. It's a straight bourbon whiskey finished in sherry casks.
It's actually double finished.
Double finished.
I was reading it. So it's twice finished in new, toasted, and charred American oak barrels and Pedro Ximenez sherry casks. Never chill, filtered, as it should be. Never is in all caps. So they're really...
pushing that.
They're really... You know, one thing as a man that I do respect is when people have strong opinions. I actually like... Not necessarily strong opinions, but... strong convictions. When one is convicted of a certain thing about this is the way something should be, because it means that you've thought about it. You have, you know, if you have strong convictions, it means that you know enough about the topic to have like an opinion.
You've weighed both sides and you've come to the conclusion.
More so than just like, I watch the news and so I have an opinion on something that I don't really know about.
Correct. Why don't you pour that? I'll read the tasting notes. So the tasting notes says the nose is a sherry with traces of caramel and cherry. The palate is raisins, cherries, and a hint of almond and vanilla. And the finish is light with a touch of dryness. Now, this bourbon is interesting because the owner, they call it Rabbit Hole because he was originally a Scotch drinker. He was originally more of a Scotch guy than a bourbon guy. But he started drinking a little bit of bourbon, and I guess he and his wife decided to go ahead and try to be a little creative and innovative in the bourbon world. And so he went down, quote-unquote, the rabbit hole of bourbon.
Okay.
And this one, because it's the sherry casks, he says, which I can also appreciate, he says, this bourbon is inspired by the founder's wife, a Louisiana native, Louisville native, who helped him fall in love with...
Different place.
Correct. Who helped him fall in love with bourbon and pulled him down the rabbit hole he may have never gone down alone. So I appreciate whenever you... give your wife a shout out in work. So,
and in fact, I'd like to go ahead and dedicate this episode to Lady Pamela. You're the most beautiful woman I know, and I love you.
Well played.
Yeah.
We're on the Lord's team?
The winning side.
So raise your glass. Cheers.
Cheers to Jesus.
Cheers.
By the way, for all of our listeners, if you want to get that great sound, let's do it one more time. When you cheers, just make sure you hold your Glencairn glass at the base.
The proper way.
Yeah, because they say it's all about the base, and I think this is what they meant, that when you cheers...
With the Catholic Man Show,
Glencairn. I think that's what that song is talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I could be misinterpreting, but...
And if you're interested...
That's how you do it.
...in this drinking vessel, this whiskey vessel, you can go to patreon.com/thecatholicmanshow. Anybody, $10 or above a month, we send out... a Catholic Man Show Glencairn glass.
As a thank you gift. Just to thank you.
Just appreciate.
For supporting
for
us.
For your support. What did you think? Did you try it?
I'm still...
It's very heavy on the...
Aromizing.
It's very heavy on the...
I just made that up. It's a word.
Yeah. The raisins and cherry.
Yeah. Kind of a syrup.
The sherry is very strong. What did you think, Jim?
It's yummy.
Jim says it's yummy.
Yummy. You know
those
what?
Are his
I was telling
notes.
Jim, I do actually like I do like yummy as a descriptor for whiskey. Just as like, that is yummy.
I do not like that.
Yummy, yummy.
Wow, it is very sweet. It is a very sweet whiskey.
It smells very sweet.
The end is very nice, though, because it has a little bit of a aggression. It's a longer finish at the end. What is this ABV? It's 46.5 ABV, 93 proof. But it is the very beginning is very sweet.
It has like an interesting viscosity. Mm. You know, like the texture of the liquid itself.
Mm-hmm.
Is kind of nice. I don't know if it like maybe feels
oily,
heavier. I was gonna say like it's a
it's more oily.
Not
than
that
me.
It's not thick, but it just feels heavy, not thicker. It's interesting.
Hmm. By the way, if you're wondering, if you're one of our new listeners on the radio on a radio station, or picking it up on a podcast, and you're wondering why are these guys drinking. If you go Catholic Answers Focus...
Then mind your own business.
Catholic Answers Focus and drinking. We did a whole episode with Cy Kellett, the host of Catholic Answers Live, on Can Christians Drink? And that kind of basically
I think
gives,
he called it the theology of drinking. Is that right? Did he call it that?
Maybe.
Well,
I'm not sure.
Maybe he didn't. I've heard people talk about the theology of drinking, and I just like want to throw this out there. I don't think that there is a theology of drinking. I don't think that it's like drinking in order to study God.
No, it's
I just,
more...
I hear people more, say that sometimes.
I would say it's more under the study of virtue.
Yes, I agree. I would... Yeah.
So...
Virtuology. Is there a word for that?
No.
We should make one.
I like that, yeah.
We should definitely invent one.
Speaking of which, speaking of Catholic Answers, so here's the deal, guys. We... have now confirmed with Carla Broussard. Carla Broussard is going to be coming on the show the end of December at some point. But what he's going to do is he's preparing right now a 8 course for our patrons on the five proofs of the existence of God by Thomas Aquinas, St. Thomas Aquinas. And he's going to be going through twice a week with us this course on the existence of God, the five ways by St. Thomas Aquinas. And he's going to basically give the lecture, and Dave and I are going to kind of give our, hey, Carlo, can you dumb it down a little bit? Or I don't understand this. Our two cents of, I'm not sure what you're saying here. Is this the right application? And so he's going to do that with us. And then at the end, for about 30, 45 minutes, we will open it up for a live Q&A.
Right. Yeah. So if you're one of our Patreon members, this will be available to you. And if you're thinking like, oh, this might be over your head, don't worry, because at this moment, I cannot even tell you what the five ways are. I could not even name them. I've seen them all before, but I get some of them confused with some of the others, because just like when you skim over them, some of them you think, wait, isn't that the same?
Right.
So like, we're going to be approaching this from a regular person's standpoint.
Mm-hmm. But I'm really excited about it.
I am too, because at the end of it, I hope to know,
have a
general grasp of the five ways.
And Carlo Broussard is a great teacher. Every time we have him on the show, he's phenomenal. We really enjoyed having him on for our couples retreat we did this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a really great retreat. So if you are actually looking to have a couples retreat, Carlo now has put together a couples retreat that I think is unique, because he approached the subject of marriage like he approaches most things from the viewpoint of Thomas Aquinas.
Mm-hmm.
Thomistic. Yeah, so he wouldn't call himself a Thomist. I think like he has like a benchmark or a certain level that you have to reach. To me, I would call him a Thomist because he strives, he's a follower of the Thomistic way.
He's a student of St. Thomas Aquinas.
If he's not a Thomist, he's Thomistic. Okay.
Correct.
So anyway, it was a really great couples retreat. So if you're looking for that, hit him up, because it's something that I think only he has.
Yeah, that he did. So it was really good. So anyway, we're really excited about this because, again, he's going to be doing this specifically for us. It's not going to be available anywhere else. We're paying him thanks to our supporters on Patreon. And anybody who's $10 or more a month is going to have access to this. And even if you can't be on the live video, you'll be able to go back and listen to it and have listen to the Q&As and have it as a resource. So
it's going to be good.
It's going to be awesome.
I got my Christmas lights up today.
I did too.
So did you.
Hey,
I did not get as many up, though. I wanted to do a little bit more this year than in the past, and I needed more lights. I went to Lowe's. They're sold out.
Yeah, you have to play the early game.
It's like,
so you have to do one or two things. You either have to get really early, or you have to play the next year game and buy all of the the closeout sales.
I just said, fine, I'll just pay less for them on Amazon and have them shipped here by Tuesday.
If you wait and hold out till after Christmas.
No, I want to put them up this year.
Well, yeah, I understand.
People have been getting rambunctious
about
putting up stuff. They were that way for Halloween. Christmas is like months before Thanksgiving. That's Christmas lights. Ridiculous, people.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, here with Adam Minahan, Juan Posada, and Jim Spencer. This segment brought to you by The Catholic Woodworker, promo code TCMS for 10% off on all purchases, site-wide.
We were the highest affiliate in
The Catholic Man Show listening crowd loves the Catholic Woodworker.
Yep. And I'm with good reason. You know what? I was a big fan of the Catholic Woodworker way before he decided to sponsor our show or anything like that.
Oh, yeah.
I had a lot of
his...
We had him on the show a long time ago. I had a lot of... I had his home altar. I had his rosaries.
Yeah.
And those are always the sweetest matchups when it comes to sponsorships, is when I already have bought in to that person or that company,
totally.
And then they wanted to sponsor it. So anyway, let's keep that ball rolling.
Advent is here. It is Advent.
It is Advent.
Christmas is in less than 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Is it in less than 4 weeks? It's in roughly 4 weeks.
Right.
So
now's
you
the
know,
time
like,
to get your Christmas presents.
You know, don't let Latare Sunday roll around. And then my mom calls that Panic Sunday. Because
that's good. Yeah, like, I like that.
Ah!
Yeah, yeah, I like that.
I don't have any Christmas presents.
So,
but when you get married, it's like, I don't know how it is at your house, dude. But
oh, Haley takes care of almost
right,
everything.
Everything. I have one Christmas present to buy.
And it's to your wife?
Yeah, I mean, essentially. That's not true. I buy, like, your present.
Right.
Juan's present. I buy Jim's present.
Yeah. But anyway, CatholicWoodworker.com. Go check them out. Let's keep that ball rolling. Support Jonathan and his family.
Yeah.
I love supporting them. Okay, so
TCMS.
TCMS, 10% off all of your purchases. That way he knows we sent you as well. So that's a bonus. So anyway, today we've been drinking a little bit of Rabbit Hole bourbon, and we're going to talk about three things.
Good. How much was this? How much? We didn't say.
Oh, it was about $65. This is a little bit on the expensive
okay,
side of
so,
the bourbon.
You know, for a scotch, that wouldn't be that bad. For a bourbon, it is. You know, that's a higher end.
Mm-hmm.
Not. I mean, you can spend a lot of money on a bourbon.
Although I've had scotches that are more than $65 that haven't been as good as this bourbon.
Yeah, I agree.
So we've been drinking a little bit of that. We're going to talk about three things to avoid as a parent, according to the Catechism of the Council of Trent today. But
in the next segment,
we're going to start talking about that. But today, instead of a gear, we're going to have another call to action. I've been on a call to action kick recently.
Yeah, I noticed that.
But it's just kind of...
It's just what's on your mind.
It's just what's on my mind. And I don't like to try to force things if it's not what I want.
I do. I force it.
Yeah. It's like, if I don't want to talk about it, then that's not what I do. So, anyway. Yeah. So, this year...
Yeah. We're going to do this, by the way.
We're doing this.
We're totally in on this.
Yeah, we have a text thread already going around. But what we're going to do is
we may or may not be doing it. We don't want to, like, blow the surprise.
Well, it's okay.
I'm just saying we may or may not be doing this.
We're gonna carol.
Maybe.
We're gonna Christmas carol this year. Dave and I, when we were growing up, our families caroled.
Yeah.
Our families got together, we practiced a couple Christmas songs,
mm-hmm.
and then we went around our neighborhood and caroled. And I think, like, I have not... Since I've been an adult and owned my own home or rented a home, I've never been caroled to. Have you?
No.
No. I mean, I don't even know if anybody still does that around here.
I'm pretty sure they don't. Like, I'm pretty sure there you could be ill-received in certain,
I definitely think you could
You know,
be.
Like, get up. Hey, get off my yard, please.
Right.
You know?
I definitely think we need to be prepared for that to happen. But here's what we're going to do.
I tell you what. If we're caroling and the cops show up... That will be, like, the best story.
I'm
That yeah. would be hilarious.
That would be hilarious.
Someone called the cops. Like, your singing was so bad
that
they called the cops on you.
Mm-hmm. So what we're going to do is we're going to pick a couple Christmas carols that we're going to learn as a group.
Yeah.
And Haley's already started teaching the kids. Like,
yeah, it's really the kids who need to know them. I mean, probably adults know the Christmas songs.
And so then we're all going to get together. You know, probably a week before Christmas or 2 weeks before Christmas. Well, I don't know. Sometime soon. We haven't solidified the date yet.
Yeah.
And go Christmas caroling. And here's what I think it does. I can remember as a kid Christmas caroling and just it bringing joy and anticipation to sharing the joy and anticipation of Christmas together. It just built up the joys of Christmas. And so I looked it up on Wikipedia, because that's where everybody looks up things to know things.
Right.
On the origins of caroling. And what used to happen is when it got cold outside, people would go around to each other's houses, neighbors, and to just give them good tidings, like, you know, like re-encouragement of
kind of like checking on them as well.
Yeah, kind of like we're getting through the cold months. And it wasn't even necessarily caroling, like they weren't singing, but they were just wishing each other well during the colder months, which is, you know, it's a virtuous act, hospitality, you know.
Yeah.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
And then Saint Francis of Assisi is the one who made it mainstream to sing caroling.
Really?
Yeah, he
I did not know that.
He promoted people to start singing and be joyful about the Christmas time.
The Italians, they do like to sing.
They do like to sing. And so, anyway, I thought it was like, I thought it was a good tradition for Advent. I think we struggle sometimes. You can have the Advent wreath. You can have the Advent candles. You light the candle before dinner every night or something like that. But as a family, it's sometimes hard to come up with traditions to build up for Christmas and to actually live out the liturgical season of Advent.
Right.
As a family.
Yeah, and I think as an adult, like if you think, hey, this is a great idea, we should do this, you should just be prepared that caroling, in reality, is far less romantic than it is conceptually. You know, like you think about the idea, oh, let's go Christmas caroling. That sounds awesome. Like a very traditional, like romanticized in my head. One needs to be prepared for a drastically different reality. And I think it's something that needs to be approached as like a work of mercy, like almost a kind of a corporal work of mercy. You know, you are going doing this for other people, you know.
Right.
Some things you do because you personally enjoy them, like they help you. They help your holiday, kind of, you know, like decorating the Christmas tree. You know, there's a lot of things you do to help get yourself into the season. And maybe Christmas caroling will do that for you, but I am expecting it to be more helping other people get into the season, right? And actually being a frustration on myself, you know?
Because it's going to be cold. It's going to be hard to walk around with little kids.
How long do we stand outside singing in front of this house before when no one comes to the door, before you go on to the next, you know, like to another house?
It's going
to
be awkward at times, I'm sure. There'll be some learning curves. And we may even, we should do it before Advent ends and give an update on the show to say, like, here's kind of the things that worked and things that did not work.
Yeah.
But I think it's important also to, this is part of like the living liturgical, like and passing down traditions to your children. Yeah. On, and not only that, but being an evangelization tool.
So when you were looking this up, is Christmas caroling a Christmas thing or an Advent thing?
Well,
did it say?
Most of the time, whenever you look things up like this, there's no distinction between Christmas and Advent.
I know.
So it did not make the distinction between Christmas and Advent. So that would be the they did not say.
I'm sure there's like this is like Catholic things that, you know, that bother you. What do you call those? When you something about pet peeves, Catholic pet peeve. You know, people wishing everyone Merry Christmas in Advent. It's like, no. Actually,
yeah, and
it's not Christmas yet.
I know that I'm going to get a lot of backlash for that, but I don't like that. Like, there's times where I wish people, hey, have a happy 4th of July weekend. Have I hope you guys have a happy Thanksgiving. It's not Thanksgiving yet, so it's not like, you know, it's
well,
like...
Well, yeah, yeah, but...
And so if I say,
if
hey,
it's like
wish you guys
days,
a Merry Christmas.
If it's 2 days before Christmas, and this is the last time you're going to see, like, this coworker... Before Christmas, obviously,
I'm just not
like,
a stickler like other people are.
But,
I'm just
but
not.
People will start saying, you know, Merry Christmas, like here in another week.
Sure.
You know, and they don't. The thing is, they don't mean I hope that you have a Merry Christmas when Christmas arrives. They think it's Christmas now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Christmas season has begun. It hasn't.
Right. I understand. I get all that. But
you know, it just we want to, if we can, correct the mistake in people, but it's just not going to happen.
Yeah. So I'm really here's what I think about the song choices for caroling, and I haven't talked to you about this yet. So
I was going to ask you about song choices.
Feel free to correct me.
Okay.
I think that you go with because I also don't think that you sing too long in front of a house, because at some point it's like, listen.
Yeah, I think three songs.
I think two to three.
Yeah.
And so. I think you do one traditional Christmas carol, like a Silent Night or something like that.
Yeah.
And then a fun one for the kids, like a Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer or Jingle Bells or something like that. And that's more for the kids because they all get excited about those type of songs. And it's more jovial than somber.
Okay.
And then the We Wish You a Merry Christmas at the end.
Okay.
That's kind of what I envision, and I haven't we haven't talked about this. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it is tough. There are so few Advent songs
Mm-hmm.
You know, O come, Emmanuel. Right, exactly. And I'm sure everybody's saying that in Mass today. I'm sure every parish in the world, or in the English-speaking world, saying that. Because it's really one of the only ones, Silent Night, kind of, but not really. Mm-hmm. You know? So it is... We wish you a Merry Christmas. Like, that's kind of good, because we can... You're not saying Merry Christmas. Like, we wish you a Merry Christmas when it comes.
Yeah.
So, it does... This kind of thing, it just bothers me.
I know. Anyway, I think it'd be fun, and it'd be fun for your kids.
It's going to be fun.
So, consider doing it.
It's going to be fun, whether it is or not. It's going to be fun.
We're going to have fun. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. We're going to talk about three things to avoid as a parent, according to the Catechism of the Council of Trent. Before we do that, I think it's important to talk about parenthood a little bit in general.
Okay.
Parenthood is such a refining process of the human, of man and woman. It's a sanctification process. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a saint-making process.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like it very often.
Oh, it definitely feels like it's a sanctification process for me.
Oh, no. For me, it feels quite the opposite. Like, when I'm getting angry and frustrated, I don't feel sanctified in the moment. Like, when I go to confession...
What is the sanctification process?
When I go to confession...
carrying the cross.
When I go to adoration, I can, like, feel...
Oh, okay.
You know
what
I mean? Like, those feel like sanctifying moments in my life.
Mm-hmm. But the everyday moment...
The day-to-day, it doesn't feel sanctifying in the moment.
It feels
enraging,
right?
You know, like, but it is, because it's when you learn to harness the rage, like suppress. When you learn to bottle it up.
Well, but that is an interesting point, because it does refine you, and it also makes you aware of who you are. I was not aware of certain things that I struggled with as a person until I became a parent.
Yeah.
Before a parent, I was always like, yeah, I'm generous. I'm generous with my time. Mm-hmm. You know, I rarely get angry. I can't even remember the last time I got angry or lost my patience or, you know,
right.
Like, you know, I thought that...
Yeah,
you know,
I'm the same way. I'm like so easygoing.
Right.
I never get angry.
But parenting...
Until like one of my kids won't eat their dinner. Eat your food!
Yeah. I mean, but it is...
Does that drive you crazy?
There are always little ticks.
I don't know why. Mm-hmm. It makes me nuts. Mm-hmm. Like, when the kids won't eat their food. Mm-hmm. Just eat your food.
So I think it's important. We've said this on the show before, but I think it's very important to re-say that as a married man, your vocation is to your wife. Your first vocation is to your wife. And the best thing you can give your children is to love your wife. Your sons are going to know how to love a woman by how you treat your wife and love your wife, and your daughters are going to learn how to be treated by a man by how you treat your wife. So it's important. The best thing you can do for your children is to love your wife.
Word.
And then it comes into, okay, after you're in the process of fulfilling your first vocation, your children can never come before your wife.
Correct.
But okay, so now that we've established that, how do we fulfill our secondary vocation as fathers?
Mm-hmm. And because your kids are they're a lot needier, you know.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
they're not as high in the priority, but they still have all these needs. You know,
things that you have to do.
Right. So you spend a lot of time on them.
Sure. So in the Catechism of the Council of Trent. Catechism of the Council of Trent. If you don't have one, you should definitely go pick it up. If you are listening and your husband does not have one, you should definitely get it for Christmas.
Great Christmas gift, because it's so beautiful. Like, it's, who's the publisher of this?
Baronius Press. They always make all the beautiful books.
Okay. I'm not as familiar with them.
They have all these.
This is, yeah, like the printing of this is really elegant. It's just a beautiful book. And I'm glad that they did this, because it's a book worthy of this kind of.
Sure. Because it's actually printing. One, as far as I understand, I'm very willing to be corrected, and feel free to correct me on our social media or whatever, but I think that it's one of only three official catechisms of the church.
Really?
Yeah, it's the first one, the Catechism of the Council of Trent. Pope Saint Pius X came out with one that was very small, very almost like the Baltimore Catechism.
But was the Baltimore Catechism was not an official catechism.
It's not, yeah, a world. It's not the official.
That was just like for the Diocese of Baltimore.
It was, and yeah, and for the U.S.
Right.
And then
if it wasn't for the Diocese of Baltimore, I don't know why they called it the Baltimore. I mean, maybe that's just where it was from.
That was Pope St. John Paul II
right.
Came out with our current
what we know
catechism,
as now the Catechism.
The Catechism of the Catholic Church, yeah. But so the Catechism of the Council of Trent, so it came from obviously the Council of Trent. It was the council was a long council. Like, you talk about, this would not pass for today's world standards, because it was almost 20 years. I think it was like 18 years long. The council was.
Wow.
Over like three or four different popes reigned during the time of the council.
Wow.
You know, it was.
When was it? Like 1300s?
No, it was 1500s. 1500s. Right. It was, the reason why it was called was to.
Protestantism?
To refute the Protestant heresy. Mm-hmm. And so it was very interesting, though, because, like, in theory, it was, you know, all of the bishops worldwide, but in practice, it was really basically just the Italian bishops gathered, because it was very hard to commute during that time, obviously.
Sure.
So what they did, though, is they, after the council, they said, like, we're going to make a catechism, and it sums up all of the council. And it's actually really awesome, because it's broken down into the creed, and then the creed, the Ten Commandments, and the Our Father. And it breaks it down into each segment.
And our current
segment.
Catechism is broken down in a similar way. I know it starts off with the creed, and then I think it does the Ten Commandments after that.
Yeah, but it's really awesome, because it's very articulate, it's very succinct,
yeah.
It's very precise.
That's what I love about it, is that they don't pull any punches.
Mm-mm.
You know, and that they say what needs to be said about that topic, you know, and they say not only what one should avoid, but what one should do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is just so specific. Mm-hmm. It's so precise, like you said.
Laser precision.
Yeah.
So in the part of the fourth commandment, in that section, it talks about duties of parents towards children. And then one of the sections talks about three things to be avoided by parents. And I thought this would be a good topic for tonight. And so we'll kind of break these down. The first one is the first place it says they're not to, by words or actions, to exercise too harsh harshness towards their children. It says this is an instruction by Paul. They're pulling it from that, from Colossians. It says, "Fathers, provoke not your children to anger, lest they be discouraged." And then I think the next sentence is very important. It says, "For there is a danger that the spirit of the child may be broken, and he becomes abject and fearful of everything."
Yeah.
And I think you can see that when you're disciplining your children. If you discipline them in anger, if you
right.
discipline them in public, you know, so what is the purpose of disciplining your children? You know, you're exercising the virtue of justice. You know, you're exercising the virtue of your fatherhood by establishing your children to be
right.
good Christian civil people.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not doing that to humiliate them. You're not doing that because you're angry.
Right.
With them. And I think that's in disciplining
yeah,
your
certainly
children.
Not because you're angry with them.
Right. And disciplining your children, it's very hard, I think, to, as a man, you have to be in control of your appetites, of your emotions,
right.
in order to discipline your children.
I mean, you might do it to humiliate them. I mean,
I don't think it's possible
where there's a scenario where that would be part of the, retributive justice that you feel like your child needs, depending on the age and what they've done. I mean, so that is theoretically possible. You know, you might seek to embarrass them.
And I would probably push back on that and say, is that best way of using
Were they bullying another kid? You know, like, it depends on what the punishment
sure.
should fit the crime. So, but certainly you're not doing it because you're angry.
Right.
You know, it should always come from a place of love. One thing that has helped me a lot in administering punishment is to pause. Because there is there's absolutely, I mean, everybody knows, every parent knows this, a temptation to, in the moment, you see them do something.
To jerk them up.
Right, and it's like, I'm going to get you for that.
Right.
You know, and just to, like, pause. Mm-hmm. Even just what helps me is just taking them and then walking with them into the next room, you know, where you just have a second.
Mm-hmm. To gather yourself.
Between their, you know, misconduct and your disciplining.
Mm-hmm.
That makes a big difference in my approach, you know, in my demeanor.
Mm-hmm.
When I sit down with them.
Yeah, I think that it's important also to not, at least for me, in my experience in parenting, I try my best not to discipline my children in public. And the reason why is because I'm not interested necessarily in, I don't want them to feel belittled. I don't want them to feel, I don't want them to be embarrassed necessarily. The reason why I am disciplining my children isn't to make them feel embarrassed. It is for them to learn a lesson and to grow in virtue.
Yeah.
And the reason why a lot of times that I try to avoid also in public is because typically it's that moment that I catch them that I want to do it in public, and my emotions aren't where it needs to be before I justly discipline my children.
Right.
And so I think it's important that you don't do it in public, because that way they know that, listen, I'm doing this at an just act, and I'm not, my emotions aren't high, and you have to first have your appetites and your emotions in check,
mm-hmm.
in order to discipline your children and show that example. Like, if they know that you're doing it in rage, then they're going to be like it says in here, fearful of everything. They're going to be worried that they're going, everything that they do is going to be wrong. And that's not what I don't want them living in fear. I don't want my children living in fear or being just completely broken where they're not willing to take a stand on something.
Right.
In fear of dad's going to be upset.
Right. Yeah. So if you're like doing something just with the hope of making them afraid,
right,
then now that's a sign that you are disordered,
right,
in the way that you're disciplining.
Because as fathers, we're supposed to be the earthly father to show them the love of the heavenly father. We're,
right,
you know, we want us to facilitate and show them the love of our heavenly father, and so that's not going to be proactive and productive in that aspect. So when we get back, we'll jump into the last two here. We're on the Lord's team,
the winning side.
So raise your glass.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles here with Adam Minahan. We're talking about the Council of Trent, being a parent.
Mm-hmm.
We were just on the other side of the break talking about discipline.
Discipline, yeah.
And, you know, I think the ideal, like, what's the ideal discipline or the ideal, like, attitude that we can encourage in our children? I think that when, you know, they do something wrong, you sit down with them and kind of get on to them, that they should agree that they deserve the punishment that you've given them. I mean,
or at least understand why it's happening.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, obviously that's not going to be the case.
Why are you getting in trouble? Because I did this.
Right.
Okay, I'm glad you understand this is why you're getting
in
trouble.
Exactly. I mean, so hopefully, and I think when they're young, they're not going to necessarily have that sense of,
sure,
I deserve this punishment,
right,
that has been given to me. But hopefully they get there, because that shows that they are developing a sense of virtue,
mm-hmm.
Not just virtues, but a sense of virtues.
Right.
And, you know, it's great if your kids learn math and science, but math and science will not get them to heaven.
Right.
So I would rather have children who are fools who are virtuous than children who are brilliant who lack virtue.
And that'll bleed into the last thing that we talk about. But so we'll move on to the second part, unless you want to.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but I'll just to sum up for that also, I think that it's important to understand that you're not just any kind of physical punishment, but verbal punishment is something that we have to be aware of.
Mm-hmm.
And the words that we say to our children have lasting effects. And again,
You should never name call.
Right. Or like belittle. Like we should not belittle our children.
Uh-huh.
We're called as fathers to build them up, and we want to be a representation of our Heavenly Father who loves us very much.
Now, there are some exceptions, like name calling. It's not actually an exception because you're not name calling. Sometimes you'll tell your child you're being a tattletale.
Right.
You know, that's not name calling your kid. Tattletale. Right. I mean, no. They are being a tattletale.
Right.
And so you're just... So there's a difference between name-calling and something like that where... You know what I mean?
Right.
Do you think so?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. So the next one is the opposite side of the coin. It says, should a fault be committed which requires reproof and chastisement, the parent should not, on the other hand, by undue indulgence, overlook its correction. And I think that this one is actually one of the main ones that is lacking in today's world. Is that the reason why is because it's hard. It's hard to do. And it takes effort as parents.
Mm-hmm.
We overlook, you know, Johnny, don't do this. Oh, well, he did it. Well, it's okay.
I told him not to.
It's not convenient for me.
He's just strong-willed.
Right. Or he's just, he's still young. Or, whatever the question,
People, when they say, oh, my kid is just strong-willed, it's like, no, you're weak-willed.
Right.
Like, maybe that's unfair of me to say, but I have never met a child whose will is stronger than mine. You know, like,
well, and it talks about how this is how children are often spoiled by parents who are not willing to correct their children.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that also this is something that we learned from Dr. Ray Guarindi, who we had on maybe a year ago or so. And he talked about, like, men, you do not let your wife be in the trenches by themselves when it comes to discipline. You
right.
get in there and you take control of the disciplinary actions within your household.
Mm-hmm.
Do not let your wife do not be good old fun dad. Do not let
right.
don't be the guy who's like, well, my wife will take care of that. You know, like, oh,
I'm the fun one. Okay,
right. Yeah, no.
It's a good cop, bad cop. I'm the good cop.
I'm the good cop. No, absolutely not. You do not let your wife have to do that alone. That is unjust to your wife, and it goes back to what we talked about at the very beginning, that your first vocation is to your wife. And so by making her do that on her own, you are not fulfilling your duty to your wife and the vocation to your wife first and foremost. And so anyway, I think it's very important that that we understand that we are not going – we should not, as men, allow our wives to be the only ones disciplining our children.
Yeah. That's one thing I've enjoyed about working from home this year, since March anyway, is that being at home every now and then, there's like the kids kind of like all start falling apart at once, you know, which mm-hmm. kind of happens every now and then, mm-hmm. you know. They're all operating on their own cycle of happiness and tiredness. Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes they all get tired at once, and like I can hear it from downstairs. And mm-hmm. so I'll, go upstairs and get to be the one who comes in. Because the kids treat me differently than they do mom. Like when they know that when I tell them something, that I mean it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think that I actually pick my battles. I just win them. I just went back, because I'm the father.
Well, so, and that goes back.
This part of my personality, I kind of have an authoritarian, approach to fatherhood. And I'm sure that there are many drawbacks to that, mm-hmm. That's something that I know about myself, mm-hmm. So I'm conscious of it, not to take it too far.
Mm-hmm.
But, I kind of have this attitude of well, you will do it because I said so.
That's what I said so.
But I hated that as a kid. And that's maybe why I do it
you
now.
Did. But that goes into the principle of, what Jesus talks about in the Gospels is, your yes be yes and your no be mean no.
Right.
And I think that is so important as parents, is to be consistent. And if you say something, it must be carried out.
Mm-hmm.
If you tell your son or daughter to come here, or you tell your son or daughter to not do something, and you have to tell them the first time, and if they don't do it the first time,
right,
okay, well, there's going to be consequences, because when I say something to you, I mean it. And it's not something that I'm just saying to you. I mean it, and you have to obey to that.
Yeah.
And that is building the virtue of piety within your children. If you don't do that,
exactly.
it is an unjust action to your children of building a virtue.
Mm-hmm.
The sub-virtue of justice.
Yeah, and obviously that plays itself out differently in a 2-year-old and a 6-year-old.
Absolutely.
You know,
like,
yeah.
I think it's not like I
told you once, 2-year-old, now, you know, it's like they're 2. They're going to be 2.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely. But
what I think it also applies, that gets overlooked a lot, are in things like eye rolls or like heavy sighs.
Mm-hmm.
Those are disrespect. That's disrespectful.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, like, okay, they might be. He's like, come here. They might be coming.
What are the things that Pamela says? Promptly, cheerfully.
We obey cheerfully, politely, and promptly.
Yeah. And I think the
obey my, first time, every time.
And when I heard Pamela say that, I was like, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I want that. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to do that.
Yeah, because it's all three: cheerfully, happily,
mm-hmm.
politely, mm-hmm. and promptly. You know, mm-hmm. it's not enough to just do one of the three. But 2 out of 3 ain't bad. No. We need all three.
We need all three every time.
Every time.
So, you know, this. I just think that dads, a lot of times, we're not willing to get into the trenches with their wives. So,
yeah, but I think it says a lot to your kids when the dad, if mom says, come over here, and you kind of get the, when the dad says, you don't speak that way to your mother.
You don't disrespect your mom.
You know, then
that
it's
is
like,
my wife.
Oh, okay. You know, because it's one thing when mom says, don't talk to me that way, but when dad comes in and says, hey, you don't speak to her that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, oh, yeah.
Right. So the last one that they talk about in the Council of Trent is actually the most important. It says, like, so these two that we've talked about, absolutely important, right?
Yeah.
And I think that it's something that you have to talk about. But it says, finally, to avoid what is most shameful in the instruction and education of children. Let them not propose to themselves aims that are unworthy. And so, like, that's kind of like what you're talking about earlier. You said, like, I would rather my kid not know anything about math or science, but be a holy person.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the current catechism 2223 talks about, you know, pulls it from the Council of Trent, talks about how we are the primary educators of our children.
Right.
And so I think that it's so important that we make sure that we are teaching our children the faith, you know, teaching our children to live virtuous lives.
Mm-hmm.
And that is absolutely the most important. It doesn't matter if your kid knows, you know, what play to run on second down, or it doesn't matter, you know.
Obviously a draw play, but I mean, whatever.
On second down, maybe. But,
yeah.
You know, to play the piano, or to play the guitar, or to act or sing, or whatever the thing is. Those are all great things, and those are important things in the life.
Or even read. I mean, there. I'm sure are countless saints who never knew how to read, and it didn't deter their sanctity, you know. And, you know, kind of with that in mind, why do we teach our kids to read if not to read the Bible? You know, what better reason is there to read? I mean, like, if you're going to say, well, my kids don't know how to read, what's the biggest drawback of not knowing how to read? There are a lot. But not being able to read God's word would have to be the biggest drawback.
Mm-hmm. And again, we've talked about this on the show so many times, that you can't give what you don't have. And that's, you know, we've talked about with Father Gregory Pine about the virtue of studiousness.
Yeah.
And the importance of, as a father, if we're the head of the household, if we're the ones who are the spiritual leaders of our family, then we have to know what battle we're in, what spiritual battle that we are in. We have to know what the church teaches. We have to know what the catechism of the Council of Trent talks about. We have to know what the catechism talks about. We have to know what the Bible says in order to teach it to our children.
But I think what this is saying not only is to make sure to teach them good things, but to not let them study bad things.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, making sure, like, what kind of television are you allowing them to watch?
What music?
What kind of entertainment are you allowing them to have? Because if you think that those things aren't formative, then you're wrong.
Right. And if they're not being formed by you, That's dangerous territory.
Right, exactly.
I don't want my children being formed by the society today.
No.
So anyway, we'll continue this on our YouTube channel. Go subscribe to our YouTube if you'd like to continue the conversation. Thank you so much to all of the radio stations that pick us up. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers to Jesus.
So I think also not only is it about what you're saying, like what not to teach, but also how you're even teaching them. Because even if you're not homeschool, like, so a lot of times I think a lot of people say, like, well, I don't homeschool. Well, that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You're still the primary educator of your children.
Right.
Even if your children go to public schools, charter schools, private schools, Catholic schools, like, I think that's one of the biggest downfalls for Catholics today.
You can't name a situation where you're not the primary educator.
Right. And I was just trying to drive that point home.
Yeah.
That, you know, I think that's one of the problems with Catholicism today is that we pawn that off to the Catholic schools. Oh, well, I pay extra for them to go to Catholic schools to learn the Catholic faith.
Right.
No. That should only be a supplement to what they're learning at home.
Or, I mean, it's not like, okay, your kids go to Catholic school. It's not like, okay, you're going to be giving them classes, you know, after they get home from school, or take out your pen and paper. Now we're going to be taking notes. But, so the primary educator, to me, the way I interpret that doesn't necessarily mean that you're maybe physically educating them, but that you are in charge of their education. You know, that you take responsibility for their education. Okay, and so, like, I send you to school. I, as your primary educator, have decided the best way for our family to educate you. To give you this education so that you might be a well-formed person is to send you to this school. And so that's what we're doing. And I'm the one who makes that decision. I send you there. I take responsibility for that education. You know, and I, you as the parent can never say, well, the school taught them this or didn't teach them this.
Well,
you need to be the one who's monitoring that. You know, so it's not like you're always – I think that term gets thrown around and kind of gets misconstrued sometimes, you know, because obviously you're not teaching them classes on Saturdays. And I mean, maybe you are, but not more than what they're getting at school.
No, but I think the underlying principles have to be there. I think the important thing is that you're forming their appetites, that you're teaching them the true, the good, and the beautiful.
Sure.
Not
right.
necessarily, you know, I'm teaching them
mathematics. It's not all academic.
Or academic, you know, but the humanity part of it is they understand that I am supposed to be a virtuous person, that I'm called to live a saintly life, that I am being formed in the virtue of piety and respecting my parents.
Right, because you cannot get a work ethic from a school. I mean, just look around, go to any class in the school, and inside that class, you will have children of wide ranges of work ethic. Some don't turn their homework in, and they don't care. Why? Right. Because parents aren't enforcing it at home.
Right.
You know?
But what's amazing is that these aren't new techniques. These are not something that is new. The Council of Trent was talking about this 500 years ago.
Sure.
You know, so like we're dealing with the same problems or the same things that we have to contend with today that people 500 years ago were dealing with.
Yeah. I mean, there are different things about raising kids now than there were 500 years ago. But,
sure.
I mean, they're really just...
principle.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, okay, well, when do you, you know, like, how old should your kid be before you give him an iPad? You know, like, it's that kind of stuff. From ages 0 to 5, it's exactly the same as it always has been. There was like a weird period in the 60s and 70s when mothers stopped breastfeeding, but that went away, and, you know, it's like, okay. Yeah. Things are still the same as they always have been.
I just think it's important to remember as dads, you know, that our first vocation is to our wives, and that we have to make sure that we are disciplining our children and not being the good old fun dad, that the secular comedy dad that you see on TV.
Right.
And that your children know that you take your faith seriously, and that they know that we're in a battle. We're in a spiritual warfare, and we have to build a virtuous life. We have to live a virtuous life.
Yeah.
And that's something that you have to facilitate gradually. And the only way to do that, you know, like the first principle is like the only way to apply justice is to be a just, you know, a just person, you know, to live the virtues like yourself.
Right.
You know, and I think that that's the double side of the coin. The mercy and justice has to be played as a parent, you know, because we're supposed to reflect God our Father, like he, you know, mercy and justice is on either side. But
yeah,
you can't do that unless you yourself are a virtuous person who have your appetites under control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I totally agree. And you know, we've said the best gift you can give your children is to love their wife or love their mother. The second best gift you can give your children is another sibling. This is
like a Mother Teresa quote or something like that.
No,
Saint Teresa.
That's according to David Niles.
Oh, sometimes Saint Teresa, Mother Teresa.
She steals my stuff.
Yeah, she does steal your stuff,
you know,
sometimes.
But
yeah,
I'm sure other people have said that.
Mm-hmm.
But that is also my opinion. And it's something that gets lost, I think, in the conversation about how to be a good parent. Well, parent more,
mm-hmm.
Because there are studies that prove this. I can't give you any of them off the top of my head, but you know, you don't need studies to know this, that single, you know, like only children tend to be more spoiled. You know, that's not that, if you only have one child, you're spoiling them. And no, it's just kind of a natural consequence. You know, it doesn't mean that you're a bad parent.
Right.
You know, but they get all this attention all the time. I mean, it's just right, kind of the way it goes. You know, like, I just don't want to offend anybody who has only one child who, you know, right. Okay, Juan's wife, she was an only child, phenomenal person.
Saintly woman,
right?
Sure.
So, but if you have more children, there's all kinds of proof that shows that those children grow up to be like...
And you get better.
More well-formed.
And it gets easier.
Yeah.
You get better at parenting, and it gets easier. Because
you can make your kids do some of the work,
right? Because your kids now teach your other kids,
right?
Which is so important. Like that is
getting the first one right, the first kid, like, because they set the tone,
right? No,
among the other kids.
That is a real thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Know, because if you can get, you know, you set the tone or you set the bar with your first kid, then mm-hmm. that kid is trying to hit that bar and hit that stride, and he's one teaching. He or she is the one teaching all the other siblings.
Right.
This is where we're supposed to go. This is where we're supposed to hit.
Yeah, and I think that's why oldest children complain that it was so much harder on me. Well, maybe it was. I mean, you and I are both the oldest mm-hmm. oldest kid in our family, and I think that, well, yeah, maybe you are harder on the oldest. I mean, I know that I tell Elizabeth, my oldest, all the time, like, hey, look, you're the oldest. I expect the most out of you.
Right.
You know,
you have to set the example.
If Mary had done what you, or if Bernadette had done what you just did, I wouldn't be that upset because she's only two. You know, but right, you're five, and
right, so I expect more.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So with more freedom comes more responsibility.
Yeah. Ooh. You should write that down.
People steal some of my stuff as well. You're not the only person.
Dude, doesn't that make you mad?
It's frustrating. Yeah. So anyway, that's all I have. Juan, are you good with that? Do you hate all this stuff?
No, it's good.
Did you find somebody
else?
When Juan says
in this inflection, he goes, "No, it's good." That's what he says when he does that. He's like, it's all right. Like that is his, like, trying not to be upset with us.
I don't think that was like
it's like, no, it's good.
Trying to cover. I think he's just like, yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
That response to me is him saying, like,
yeah, it's okay.
It's not his response of that was the best episode.
No.
But well, it was just fine.
He told the world that Joe was a saint, so this is going to be the greatest episode.
Yeah. Did you find a quote that says about the sibling?
So it's attributed to John Paul II, Saint John Paul II.
What did he say?
That, but is being fact-checked.
But
he has a bunch of... There's a bunch of quotes with his face on it.
The greatest gift you can give your child is another sibling. That's what supposedly he said.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's wrong. Yeah, it doesn't surprise me that he didn't say that.
But the Council, the Catechism of the Council of Trent is something you guys should definitely check out. Yeah. It is really, really
and
good.
If you have a verbum library and you don't have this in your verbum library, like this book is verbum.
I've pulled
like main hardcore verbum material right here.
I've pulled a lot of stuff from this.
Right, because when you're doing research, like this is a reference big. I mean, it's like the Catechism. You know, it's not like you're sitting down with it on a Tuesday afternoon with your cup of coffee. I mean, you could. It's also very beautiful, actually. This book is written in a beautiful way. You know, it's old school.
Go check it out.
All right.
I'm done.
Finding someone on an online Catholic dating site shouldn't be like shopping for a blender. So why do most dating sites leave you feeling like you're shopping for a spouse? At Catholic Singles, we connect members through our unique user polls and activities, which help you discover other members and their personalities and interests. Because you're a person, not a profile picture. So stop shopping and start discerning. Trust your love story to the original Catholic dating site and use the promo code REDBOX at checkout for 20% off at CatholicSingles.com.